It's addressing the question of how the church, how Christians, how people of faith should look on the world of politics, the world of business, the world of economy, and whether we're at home in it, or whether we are threatened by it, or whether we are scared by it. And many people are inclined to take that negative attitude of thinking of the secular as frightening. So I remind the listeners to my paper that at the beginning of the nation state in Europe, states were attempting to establish themselves as sovereign. That means as having the highest authority over matters of law and justice and right within their own domains. Now, having the highest authority meant they had to reject an even higher authority of the church as it was at the time. So the secular in the past saw the religious as scary, because church, faith, religion claimed to have a higher authority than that of the state. So you've got authors like Machiavelli, who says, is it better to be loved or to be feared for the prince, for the government? And of course he insists the prince has to be feared. And Thomas Hobbes said the same thing. The government, the sovereign, is the one who is able to coerce people by keeping them in fear, in awe. So one of the reasons why the secular sovereign state emphasized fear was it was competing with the church. Because the church, repeating the words of Jesus, do not be afraid of them. The governments and the judges who will cast you into prison, who will persecute you, Jesus says, do not be afraid of them. So here's the governments of the secular states and the new sovereign states in Europe, fearful that their own citizens would be even more afraid of divine retribution than they would be afraid of the civil magistrate. And so that's why they had to keep religion under control. And so that's the background to the point that I would want to make in my paper.
And would you also be saying that the church itself, and we'll talk about the Catholic Church here, but the churches in general, they also had their power battles. I mean, they saw themselves right up to pre-Vatican II as the Catholic Church saw itself as supreme and above the state and wanted to be largely in control of that state and its laws.
Well, that's not going to be the point of my focus for my paper, though there is an argument to be made there, the learning curve of the Catholic Church. Going back to, I suppose, its true origins before Constantine and before it became established. The point now is, of course, for the church to find a way of seeing itself in relation to the secular, which it no longer is attempting to control, which is no longer able to control it, control the church, I mean. So another aspect of my paper will be to look at the work of a Canadian political philosopher who has revisited the history of the discussion of civil religion. Mm-hmm. So states, in order to get control of religion, realized they couldn't get rid of it, but they had to control it in some way. And thinkers like Jean-Jacques Rousseau came up with the idea of a civil religion. But what Biener is drawing our attention to is that we have misunderstood Rousseau. Rousseau came to realize that the civil religion, the manufactured religion that he would rely on for getting cohesion and sense of community and commitment and motivation for people to do the right thing, that kind of religion wouldn't work because it would not be true religion. It wouldn't actually give what the gospel and what faith in the gospel can give. So coming to that discovery is an important learning curve, as the church has had its learning curve, the secular has had its learning curve, anticipated already in Rousseau, that it cannot control religion. So I draw attention then in my paper to the fact that the state, the nation state today, in various ways, has had to accept that it is not in everything the highest authority. There are higher authorities. Now, I'm not pleading there for them recognizing religion or church directly as the higher authority, but no nation state today can ignore the issue of human rights, the articulation of human rights as the standards below which no state should fall in its treatment of its own citizens. So here is a higher authority articulated in the Universal Declaration, but then also in international law. A second form of higher authority is related to that, is the way in which the principle of non-intervention has been watered down and abandoned. So states now have to face the fact that in international law, other states can legitimately intervene and take away from them their power when they are in violation of the human rights of their citizens. And the third way in which sovereignty is no longer absolute and supreme is the way in which states have learned that they have to pool their sovereignty, as we do the nation states of the European Union. The Brexiters haven't understood this in Britain. They think that the Parliament in Britain has given away its sovereignty. It hasn't. The sovereign Parliament has pooled its sovereignty with the other states of the European Union. But this is replicated around the world in the ASEAN and in the Organization of African Unity and in other groupings of states where individual states realize they cannot be absolute and the supreme sovereign in their own domain. So these
the
are the kinds of points.
Implications of that, therefore, in terms of the possibility of a church-state relation that is not based on fear.
Yes, and being able to recognize that in the secular we are dealing with a whole range of possibilities, from the extremely bad, the Pol Pot regime, Nazi Germany, etc., Soviet Union and the Gulag, but we can also be dealing with regimes and forms of organization and of government that are genuinely open to standards and to values and to issues that go beyond what they themselves can manage and control. So the sense of the secular as open to the transcendent, as open to higher values. So if you look back at for instance, great moments where we can see Martin Luther King standing up for civil rights in the United States against racism. His motivation was religious.
Yeah.
But when the law is changed and when civil rights are implemented either in theory or in practice, it is done not by invoking the religious language, but by invoking secular language of dignity, human rights, that of course are open to the higher, deeper meaning. Similarly, it was religious people who agitated in Britain and in the United States for conscientious objection to be recognized. Their motivation was religious, and that was included then in the law and accepted, but not on the terms of religion, but on the terms that are secular, but secular terms that are in turn open to the higher, deeper values.
And Pope Francis seems to inculcate that in many ways in the way he speaks, and when he went to America, and he has a critique of economic policy. He had really important things to say there that were both religious and state oriented.
Yes, indeed, and that has been a good tradition in Catholic social thinking. You know, the Church's line now with Pope Francis, but it has been the consistent, has been to talk in terms of the common good, social justice, commitment to the conditions of those who are excluded, the marginalized, those who are... this is all done in language that is accessible to the secular, but it is in language that is also open to the deeper truth, that each one in their human dignity has that dignity because they are called into relationship with God. As creatures, then also as redeemed and as invited into a community in eternity with Christ. So, but in order for people to accept the importance of human rights, social justice, the common good, they don't have to endorse the religious language. But that the secular can use its own secular language, which is open to these richer, deeper meanings, that's the point.
And that's a hopeful place to be then, it would seem to be, you're saying today, in terms of the relation of church in a pluralist society.
Yes.
Not scary.
It's not scary. The secular isn't scary. We can learn to read the dynamics of what goes on in the secular as positive. Of course, there are also negative signs that we have to bear in mind. The achievement of the secular in being open to the greater, richer, transcendent dimension is a fragile achievement. The achievement of human rights is a fragile achievement as we see it violated again and again around the world.
The inability to control maybe unbridled capitalism, which we've seen has critiqued here this morning by various speakers, leading to a sort of a sense of a flattening out and a very consumerist mentality. I see you're laughing.
Yeah, because that's a whole complex set of questions. I mean, one of the things I say provocatively to the students is the problem is not too much capitalism, the problem is too little capitalism. The way in which Because you see, very often what we associate capitalism with is monopoly capitalism. Whereas the whole insight of people like Adam Smith is that competition is of value in increasing efficiency, in encouraging ingenuity and creativity. And what is the tragedy about capitalism as it is in our world is that millions and millions of people are excluded from participating in it. And this has been the great insight of Hernando de Soto, the Peruvian economist, who did so much to reform his own country, but he's published this little study of why capitalism succeeds in the West and fails everywhere else. Millions of people who are creative and who have the possibility of making wealth are excluded from participating in our system by the regulations and the regimes that we put in place to, for instance, give access to credit, to give people licenses, to own and open a business. De Soto has documented how people have to go through so many legal steps that poor people are excluded from participating in the market. So it's not too much capitalism is at fault there. It's not enough capitalism. And the structures that are in place that exclude all of those people function to protect the interests of some, you know, the interests of those who are already benefiting.